RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the very first Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Monday Morning Val
and Beans, and we have a very, very special guest with us today. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, hey, everybody, it's me, Brandon Strock, the founder of the hashtag Walkaway campaign.
Woohoo!
And there we go.
Now, we
First of all, I didn't know until the Levin spot that it really was just Strock. I've been saying Strock up for over a year now.
That's totally fine. You're in really good company. The vast majority of people say it that way. I'm not even going to use the word mispronounce because I think it is literally just me and my nuclear family that pronounces it Strock, and the entire rest of the world says Straka. So you're absolutely fine.
Thank God.
We were just having a conversation off air about how low energy these gentlemen are, and they have a plot to take me down.
You couldn't just let the plot play out?
No, of course. What do you think I am? Are you crazy?
Well, whatever.
I'm very clever.
You take me out of my own damn show. Are you out of your mind? So, for those of you who don't know, Brandon and I became very, very close when we planned the March on Washington together last year, which was really crazy, but so successful and wonderful. And ever since then, we've been sort of like attached at the hip doing things together. But Brandon has done some absolutely stunning and amazing work with the Walkaway campaign. And we're going to get into a lot of that today. We're also just going to kind of BS about what's going on in the world. And we're going to talk about some things that are really important. And when I interviewed you, Brandon, back like, what, a year ago now almost, one of the questions I asked you was about Spygate and what you knew about like what was going on in that realm. And you knew basically that it wasn't true, but it wasn't like a focus of yours, correct?
That's true. Yeah, not a focus.
And that wasn't what caused you to walk away.
No, not at all. It was for in my world, it was something that I was beginning to hear more about and learn more about, and that people around me who had been kind of conservatives and very investigative themselves were more knowledgeable about and were kind of beginning to educate me about. And my mind was open to it because I had walked away. If I hadn't walked away, I would have been like, oh, you conspiratorial idiots.
Yeah, that's a good word for a Monday, investigative. It proves that you are awake.
Thanks, sweetie.
Yeah. Frank, you on your show at night, you cover a lot of stuff, but you also cover a lot of the cultural side of things.
Yeah.
And you guys, I think, can jive really well about that stuff because, Brandon, you're really embedded in that arena as well. So what I wanted to do today was kind of start the show off with a clip from Devin Nunes about what they're doing in terms of criminal indictments that they're rolling over to the Department of Justice and talk about that for a few minutes. And then we'll get into some stuff about Walkaway and some other things that are more on the cultural side because it's super important. You guys down with that?
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to listen to a quick clip, if it works, from Devin Nunes on Maria Bartiromo's show about the criminal indictments that he's getting ready to hand over to William Barr at the Justice Department. And Brandon, do you have earphones by chance?
I do.
Can you put them on? Because I'm getting a little teeny bit of echo from you.
Yes, Tracy.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, there we go.
Production on the fly.
Production on the fly. That's how we do things here. We produce on the fly.
I'm plugged in.
All right, off we go. Let's see if this will go for me. It's not working.
You know, it's funny. I have this. Wind. Pretty much the what is it? The windscreen, and I can't really mount it in any kind of sufficient way. So I'm holding it up to my mouth like it's a monocle.
A monocle for your mouth.
A monocle for the mouth. Just so we don't get the pops.
Brandon, get off your phone and pay attention.
I am. I thought you were playing a clip. No.
Phil, I'm trying to get it to work. You guys got to fill some time here. Come on.
Oh, well.
Sorry, that wasn't clear to me.
Wait, so Brandon, what did you just got? You just filmed another spot for television?
Yes. On Saturday night, I got to sit down with Judge Jeanine for the first time in quite a little stretch of time. And it was great getting to talk to her again.
I know that you had spoken to her in the past. Now, I have not checked her out at all. She was the DA over here in my county. You know that, Tracy?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, she was back in the 90s or the late 90s. She was breaking up all of the Westchester teenage house parties with liquor. So she was a little bit of an enemy of the state for all of us when we were in high school. Like, oh, Jeanine's gonna come after us, girl. But aside from that, is that something that was recorded? Is going to be aired at a later date, or did you do it live? I don't know her schedule.
No, her show is live. It's always live. Yeah, so
check it out.
Yeah. Usually she'll pop out some clips on social media, so I think that should be coming soon.
You know, one of the things that I loved about you have become such a professional with this stuff because, like, you know, you have a certain amount of time and you have a lot to say. I've never heard an interview where someone was able to speak so quickly and make their points without people getting lost. Like, we were talking about filler words on Friday and how I use them too much. You didn't use a single filler word in that entire interview.
I'm totally familiar with what you're talking about. First of all, thank you. Like, what are the filler words that you use?
You know.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, things like that.
Yeah, you know, I do, though. I think maybe sometimes people don't notice it as much when I do it, because I do sometimes go, to me, I hate it. When I watch my interviews back, I'm just like, oh, well, I sounded like a bumbling idiot, but see?
Yeah, but see, that's okay.
It is?
That right there. You'll notice when you notice the problem, that's when it's too much. When all of a sudden you find yourself counting likes, that's when you know somebody's. But if you're having a conversation, the natural cadence or natural, you know, flow of a conversation, sometimes you'll hear a you know in there, you'll hear an but it's a timing mechanism at that point. It's not a crutch. There's a difference between the two.
I see. Okay, good. That makes me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
But, you know, that's a whole psychology. I think we could do another entire show on that, because I've actually, so when I've watched myself and I've noticed the uhs, I actually have tried to make a mental effort at times to get rid of them. And what I've noticed is that it throws me completely. Like, if I actually make an effort to be like, don't say it's like it throws my whole brain process. And then it's like I actually think much slower and in a much more distracted way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you, because I've been trying to do it myself and it makes me stupid. All right, I have it ready. I'm going to play this now. Are we ready?
Cool. Yes.
Those referrals, these are criminal referrals. Two of them I know are about conspiracy. What can you tell us? Tell us as much as you can in terms of breaking this news this morning that you are prepared to send over 8 criminal referrals next week. What are they, Congressman?
So I would say that, first of all of these are classified or sensitive. And so because a lot of them could contain sensitive or classified information. 5 of them are what I would call straight up referrals. So just referrals that name someone and name the specific crimes. Those crimes are lying to Congress, misleading Congress, leaking classified information. So 5 of them are those types. There are 3 that I think are more complicated. So you mentioned conspiracy. So the question on conspiracy is what, you know, there's the conspiracy statute, and then what do they need to look at under that statute? So on the first one is FISA abuse and other matters. We believe there was a conspiracy to lie to the FISA court, mislead the FISA court by numerous individuals that all need to be investigated and looked at. And we believe the statute is the conspiracy statute. The second conspiracy one is involving manipulation of intelligence. That also could ensnarl many Americans. And we are, so that's kind of the second.
Seriously?
One, as you know, we've had a lot of concerns with the way intelligence was used. So that would be kind of the 2 conspiracy recommendations, referrals that we're making. The third is what I would call a global leak referral. So there are about a dozen highly sensitive, classified information leaks that were given to only a few reporters over the last 2.5+ years. So, you know, we don't know if there's actually been any leak investigations that have been open, but we do believe that we've got pretty good information and a pretty good idea of who could be behind these leaks. It doesn't mean we know all the people that are behind the leaks, because, you know, when you read these, a lot of these, they're always anonymous sources. And they always say something to the effect of current and former senior officials. So we think we've got a pretty good idea of who some of the sources are behind these leaks. We don't know if the Department of Justice has been looking at these, but, you know, there's just been unprecedented things have happened. And all this closed with this. You had conversations with the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Australia leak. You had leaks of the President Trump talking to the Mexican president leak. We all know the travesty of General Flynn. Nobody knows where those supposed transcripts came from. So those are just, you know, kind of three examples that are absolutely horrific. But there's things that are even worse that were leaked. And there's only a couple, two or three reporters involved in this. And so.
Bam. So.
Yeah. Did he, because I was listening there, but did he mention the FISA application?
He did. And later on, he said that the FISA application was their insurance policy, and there were far worse things that happened that we haven't even heard about yet.
My God. Well, at least it sounds like something's happening.
So, Brandon, how important is it to you that these people that did this to President Trump face accountability? Like, is it something that you even really consider important, or, you know, from your perspective?
Yeah, I think it's super important for a number of reasons. First of all, I don't think that, well, I mean, we know that Democrats at least claim to care about corruption within the government, which is why we just wasted like $30+ million on a bogus investigation. Of course, that was mostly just because they hate the president and they want him to be impeached. But the point is that I think anybody, regardless of political affiliation, probably does not want to believe that we live in a country where our own government is conspiring against its own people and is corrupt at a level in which we're trying to, you know, overthrow a duly elected president or government official. So, I mean, yes, I care a lot about that. I want to believe that the government has good players in it, and that we're getting rid of anybody who, you know, would engage, who would basically weaponize our own government against us. So yes, I think it's very important. I think it's important to most people, even if they seem to only care when it's pointed at Donald Trump.
I like that answer, Frank.
Yeah.
You so this is where the worlds collide in a way, I think. Because what I wanted to talk to Brandon about now is, you know, let's just unpack this a little bit. You know, for normal listeners of our show, they'll say criminal referrals from the House Intelligence Committee don't have any weight because they don't have the ability to prosecute, and they hand these over, and then the Justice Department just basically sits on them.
Yeah.
But what's different about this is that Nunes makes a point to say that he's taking these criminal referrals and handing them directly to William Barr, the Attorney General, because there are still people in the FBI who are implicated in the referrals. So they're still there.
Yeah.
Who could that be?
I don't know. You know, do you have first of all, is that rhetorical? Do you have an idea?
I do.
Okay, well, how about you say that first?
Well, no, because I don't want to taint the pool here of who people think it might be.
My whole thing is this: for every one person we know, it's like finding a mouse in the house. Well, once you see one, you know that there's 10 others somewhere else. And I go back to whenever we talk about the FBI or the infestation in the executive branch at any point, I'm looking at what it really means on the massive level that we started seeing in the 20th century. So this is, and I'm not saying that we have old school Soviets in the government, because it's 2019. It's a couple of generations later. I think it's just like the mutant offspring of what was an initial Soviet infiltration. So I think that these fellow travelers have been there for so long that for every one name we're going to do, remember during the election, remember Project Veritas, everything that was being exposed from, whether it be low-level DOJ people or I forget what other kind of departments that we were getting all of those videos from, where you have people saying flat out, I'm doing DSA, Democratic Socialists of America work on the clock here, and it's impossible for federal employees to be fired and this and that. So for every one ringleader, you know, there's just minions everywhere. That's why ultimately I want to see all these people punished with, you know, in swift and in convincing manner, just so that there's some kind of a deterrent. Maybe somebody on the inside says, you know what, I'm going to switch over to the private sector and get the hell out of here, because maybe it's actually, there's some heat up my ass now. But aside from that, I just want to see entire bureaus destroyed. I want to see everything just destroyed. Exactly.
Burn it to the ground.
That's the biggest problem right here. It's too much humanity. There's too much human influence in this entire thing.
Who do you think it could be that's still at the FBI, Brendan, that they could, if you even, you know, you might not know all, listen, we're idiots. We're crazy here on this show. We pay very close attention to this stuff. It's all we do. So
what are my thoughts about specifically who it is?
Yeah. Who do you think they're going to send over? This is like criminal referrals for not only just leaking, but conspiracy against the United States. That's massive. Who do you think is still at the FBI that could have been involved?
You know, I don't think that I could really venture to guess that, you know, that's, I think that's above my pay grade, probably a little bit, but I do listening to what Frank said. I think that that's interesting and something to consider. You know, I'm coming into this basically just having my eyes opened a couple of years ago. And before I had my eyes opened a couple of years ago, I used to believe, you know, I was basically a liberal who believed that government was good. And, you know, people talk a lot now about, you know, liberals basically treat the government as if the government is God, and they want, you know, and place all of their trust. And that was sort of how I was. So the whole concept that there are people, you know, or like a deep state, or like, you know, a whole network of people in our government who would be corrupt and who would be working, it's, that's still something I'm starting to wrap my mind around. And I wouldn't sit here today and venture to guess who the players are, or what's going on exactly. I mean, I'm just now starting to like wrap my mind around the concept that this, such a thing could even exist in the first place.
And yeah. Who's left, though, Tracy? I guess that, can you give us some people that are left so we can do process of elimination?
Well, Priestap is still there. Orr is still there.
Orr.
Dana Bonte is still there. And I know everybody throws arrows at me when I talk about him, but he signed a FISA warrant. Rosenstein is still there. So
for some reason, I think Rosenstein is getting a pass.
Yeah. I mean, he may, or maybe they were hanging him out to dry, saying, you help us with this damn Mueller report or otherwise. You don't know. But in talking about that, Brendan, too, like, what do you notice with walk away? Like, do you see more people walking away because of like stuff that goes on? The Kavanaugh thing I know was huge for walk away.
It was.
Is it more political corruption driven or more cultural issue driven?
That is a great question. I think that my instinct says that it's probably a little bit more culture, because I think there's a little psychology behind it. I actually believe that the majority of liberals are not even really that politically inclined. I think that they're more culturally inclined. I think that they believe that what they feel, I think that what they feel in our culture, they think is sort of downstream from politics. And so that is sort of like their gauge of what's happening in the government, what's going on. I don't think that the average liberal, I don't think it's typical that the average liberal is that involved in and knowledgeable about what's going on in the government, what's going on in politics. They just sort of know what they feel from what's happening in their everyday life.
Yeah.
And so feelings. And so and that's not true all the time. I mean, there are definitely liberals that are very, very smart. And, you know, I think that they're misguided, but they are very smart and they do really follow what's going on. And so I think that I think that it's more about the culture and less about the politics, but that's not true in every case. I mean, every person walks away, I think, for different reasons. But the majority of people, I think it's based, just like you said, sort of off of how they feel. And it's like, wow, I don't feel like there is a unity that exists anymore. A lot of people, I think, became liberals because they thought that they were fighting for a good cause. They thought they were fighting for more equality for marginalized people. They were fighting for, you know, a better humanity. And what they're finding is that, wow, the vast majority of the anger and the disruption and the disconnection and the division that's happening right now is actually coming from the left.
Brilliant, because I agree with you, and you see it coming out of some of their leaders' mouths. Like, we'll get to AOC today for sure. We got to talk about, yeah. But yeah. One of the ways that they've been able, and you talk about this all the time, to successfully galvanize is by identity politics. And so, you know, separating people into groups, who's more marginalized, who needs more support, who do we feel bad for today? What I want to get into with you a little bit, which is going to be a little bit controversial, to be honest, is what is happening with what we see. I mean, in terms of this permeating through now to the right, like, you walked away from the left because of this.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing now in terms of this happening now on the right?
Well, I think that we probably need to dissect it a little bit, like, piece by piece. I mean, in a general overarching way, I guess my answer to that is what I've discovered, and, you know, I'm seeing a lot more of it recently, and I'm not exactly sure why, but there are certain conservatives, and I'm certainly not saying the majority whatsoever, but there are some conservatives, and more, a good number of them, more than I wish there were, that are sort of weaponizing the concept of identity politics and political correctness, which is so bizarre because they're actually engaging in the very same behaviors, or some of them are actually in a way worse, I think. But what they're doing recently, God, what was it? Just within the last like 48 hours, I had an argument with somebody online, a conservative, who told me that, because I was talking about a post that was on Twitter in which a conservative was saying that being a conservative today is the same or worse, I can't remember which, the same or worse than being gay in the 80s. And I became kind of enraged when I read that, because listen, there's different like levels here. If this person had said being gay 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, totally like reasonable comment that, you know, I would have let slide. But I mean, when she went so far as to say, I mean, being gay in the 80s, we're talking about like the height of the AIDS crisis. We're talking about like gay men dropping dead, people being afraid to touch gay people, like literally nurses and doctors letting gay people die.
Oh, do we lose Brandon?
Ever show is a horror. Like, I would never in a million years begin to what? Excuse me?
We lost you for a second, but it sped up and caught up. We're talking about doctors and nurses.
Oh, yeah. I said, you know, we're talking about an era of time in which, you know, even doctors and nurses were afraid to touch gay people. And there were, you know, oftentimes gay people were dying alone in hospital beds without their families who had disowned them. And literally walking down the street was a scary thing, I think, for people. Now, to me, that's not the same thing as, you know, not being able to comfortably wear your MAGA hat in public, or, you know, the idea that if you come out as a Trump supporter at work, you might lose your job. Those are horrible things. Like, and I mean, that's horrible enough. Like, we can have a conversation about that. I feel like she went too far. So I objected to the comment, and there were, you know, again, not the majority, but there were a number of conservatives who were jumping in and telling me, oh, Brandon, that's just your leftover identity politics speaking there. You know, you still have liberalism left inside of you and whatnot. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. Like, you're literally trying to control what I can say in my speech by telling me that, you know, I'm wrong. You're weaponizing the concept of identity politics and using that sort of as a way to suppress my opinion and what I'm trying to say.
And not only that, but you're taking the stance of it's not that bad. You're taking this. Right. You're taking a stance of, hey guys, honestly, let's calm down. They're saying, no, you should be more angry about this. It's the exact.
We're victims. Yeah. Like, don't take away my victimhood. Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
So that's, I mean, and it's frustrating to me because I'm starting to see more of this pop up. Like, while it may seem like it's well-intentioned to have different groups form their own coalitions to walk away from the left, they're taking all of that and it's, you know, one of the things that makes conservatism what it is your individuality and the fact that that's not how we operate or judge people. Like, I'm seeing, you know, Jexitus, Blexit, you know, they're based around just one certain identifying factor about a group. To me, that's weird.
Well, I think it's kind of rude that you left out Legxit, Megxit, Chegxit, LG Begxit, and Caxit.
I forgot about those. I'm sorry.
Well, see, that's not okay. That's not okay. That you
and those
forgot.
Are real. Those are real things.
Yeah. Well, actually, and yesterday I saw somebody hashtag Wexit. What do you think that is? Is that white?
White exit.
White exit?
Wexit.
Wexit. What do you think that is? It can't be. White exit? Know.
Well, I mean,
maybe it's just a joke. what's real and what's real?
Frank, yeah,
exactly.
That's what we thought. Like, when I started looking at some of this, I thought that it was not real. Like, I'm like, this can't be real. Okay, this is funny. Ha 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 ha. But it was real. It was real.
Oh my God. Okay, I just looked it up. Are you ready for this? Oh my God. It's official. Cannabis is now formally joining the walkaway movement. Walkaway weed. Wait, what? That's got to be a joke. Please, that's got to be a joke.
Wegs. Well, you know what it is, and here's the whole thing.
Actually, I'm more okay with that one than any of the others. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but and that might be good because you can definitely see how the whole marijuana thing has been hijacked by progressives. Because the thing here is, they always try to be able to get on out there and do something they want. They're destroying Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, wherever the hell it is, they're killing themselves. Next door in Connecticut, they're trying to find a way. Everybody is trying to fight back against the state government to stop the institution of all these toll roads that they want to put in because they're in such bad financial shape. The marijuana angle is what progressives are taking now to be able to create revenue where, you know, they only have deficits right now. So for anybody that's, oh, we're for marijuana, this and that. No, you're not. No, you're not. The libertarian wants marijuana to be legalized because it's just a fucking plant. Oh, shit. You can beep that out.
No, your curses stay in the show.
Okay. I can't help myself. It is just a plant. You know, you want to go grow six plants in your backyard, go ahead and do it. The progressive says, yeah, sure, we're going to legalize it. Everybody has a right for this and that. We're going to tax it at 80%, though. You know, so it's never real. So I can actually see people walking away and saying, you know what, this marijuana movement is, I think, a little bit too controlled. And we just want to be able to plant a couple of plants in our backyard and just stay the hell away from it. Because nothing is really free. Everything is just an illusion. I have a lot to say on the actual running away and everybody splintering off and doing their own thing there too, whenever we get back around to it. But
do it now.
Go ahead.
Do it now. Go for it.
The whole thing kills me because whenever I see this, first of all, Occupy Wall Street. In 2011 or whatever the hell Occupy Wall Street popped up, and we went down to Zuccotti Park and we're watching what people are doing out there in New York, and we saw it pop up in Oakland and everywhere else in the country that it sank its roots. Watching all this, like, all right, there's some really good energy on the ground here. What is everybody talking about? They're talking about Wall Street. They're talking about financial control. They're talking about money. They're talking about our responsibility to pay down this unbelievable amount of debt. They're talking about school loans. Okay, great. And what is standing behind all of that stuff, especially with school loans, starting from the back, working forward? The reason why tuition is so out of control is because we're now federally guaranteeing people to go to college for whatever they want. These loans are guaranteed by the federal government, which means the demand is going to go through the roof for something that is in limited supply. It's like everything else they do, healthcare, anything else. And now that you're saying, well, hey, it's a blank check from the government, charge whatever you want. But it's not just schools that are are inflating their prices. They have to, because they have to build new facilities, hire more teachers, janitors, whatever the hell it is. All of this stuff is government. It's all standing behind every last one of these issues people are marching for. And I was waiting to see, especially with Occupy Wall Street, who is going to put it all together. I go out there and everybody's just asking for debt forgiveness. They're asking for free college. It's a complete socialist screed. And there's only one or two people there talking about the Federal Reserve. There's only
I was there.
Seriously, if you were there.
I was talking about the Fed.
You were one of three people then.
I was there with my friend Danny.
I forgot who the hell I met down there, but I was talking to one young guy and one older vet who were talking about the Federal Reserve. And this is the whole thing. There's a lot of energy, I believe, that is being wasted, and it is being redirected, because what we have, if you have a movement right now, we got to show people the Constitution and federalism, and we need to be able to start thinking about what we can nullify on a state and a community level, and just tell the federal government has taken liberties it does not have. It does not have the responsibilities it pretends to have. And really, when we say, well, we need to fight it in court, no, all we need to start doing is refusing. On a state level, just like Missouri's doing with their gun laws, saying that all federal gun laws do not apply in this, as it applies to the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights, our state is our state. Your federal gun laws can go take a hike. This is exactly what we need to start doing. All the people along the border, those border states need to start just doing what they got to do. This is what it's all about. The energy spent in everybody trying to walk away, like you see all these splinter movements now, like that Brandon is bringing up, this is getting right back into the pendulum swinging the other way as far as people grasping at identity, instead of showing that what we're really looking for culturally here is the right to restore our republic so that we are all free as individuals and we are free to be free from each other if we want to be. It's not about 325 million people walking as a roving mob in one direction and trying to make the best case for what direction that is. It's 325 million individuals living their lives the way they want. So, I mean, this is really what we need to harness before the wave dies out on the shore and something else pops up.
So what are the dangers? Like, Brandon, frustrating for you to see this happen, or what are your thoughts? And Frank, I actually led a march to the Fed with the Wall Street people, just letting you know. You must have missed that day. But
I did.
But yeah, what do you think, Brandon, about this? And what is the plan? Like, is there one? Is there a plan, or will we just let this go?
What great questions. Okay, is it frustrating? I have felt frustrated in the past, mostly because, I mean, I guess I should just, like, you know, not hold back, right? I mean,
no,
that's
just, yeah. No, don't hold back.
So listen, many of these people, I don't actually, well, that's just the point. I don't know them, okay? And let's start there. So I think one of the sources of my frustration, perhaps one of the very greatest sources of my frustration, has been that, okay, when I started the Walkaway campaign, there was no other movement of its kind. There was not a movement to leave the Democratic Party, which is not to say that there haven't been people for ages that have been trying to wake people up and say, look at what the Democratic Party is doing. Look at how bad this party is for you. Like, I certainly did not invent that concept, and I wasn't like a revolutionary in that way. And again, you know, when I started this, I wasn't even terribly political. I started something based off of an experience that I was having, and that I thought to myself, I want to walk away from the Democratic Party. I feel extremely uncomfortable doing it because I know that my friends are going to turn on me and people in my family are going to turn on me. But I know that I would feel, and I know that a lot of other people are feeling this way, and I know I would feel a lot better if there was sort of a network of support where people didn't have to feel like they were doing this on their own. And I didn't see that existing or happening anywhere. So I thought, why don't I start that? You know, because I think there's a need for this. It needs to exist. So I did. And when I did, there was no such movement of any kind. Now, it got an amazing reaction and response from people on the left and the right, which is why we have what we call the walk withs, the people who walk with those who walk away, because people on the right, I think, wanted this just as much as people on the left wanted it. But what has been disappointing for me, honestly, is seeing the way that these very same conservatives who I feel like we've sort of formed this family and this network and this growing movement, but just how quickly they'll jump onto something just based off of a trending word without asking any questions. And to be honest with you, yes, it does make me question myself a little bit, because I'm like, geez, was walk away even that great of a concept? Or did you just like the hashtag and you were like, oh, you know, I'll write you a check and sign up right now. You know, I never hear conservatives ask who's behind this movement. What do we know about this movement? Is this an organic movement, or is this being funded by good or bad operatives? Are liberals behind this new movement? And is this an effort to divide the good work that's being done with Walkaway and the progress that Walkaway is making? These questions never get asked. It's just like they literally see, oh, hashtag Pexit, Wexit, Kegs, what? And they're like, oh, I love it. I love it. I don't even know what it means. I'm going to start adding it to all of my tweets. And it's like, you know, and literally I see people sometimes now tweeting or posting, and it's, you know, they start with hashtag walkaway. And I mean, for people who think it's ridiculous that there's LGBTQIAA, I mean, it's like they're adding letter after letter after letter to exit and thinking that this is the most brilliant thing in the world. And I'm like, what are you guys, like, what do you even know about what you're supporting?
And it's funny, because when you first came out to do this, people really scrutinized you.
Right. Well, and that's, I think, another danger, is that they automatically assume that because I panned out to be authentic, genuine, you know, I had to go through a long vetting process of being scrutinized. And now I think that they just think, oh, well, all of these exit movements are just authentic and or grassroots and organic, and let's support it. And
well,
Frank, hold your thought. I just wanted to put a little sentence in. If you say anything like that, you're attacked with pitchforks and flaming, you know, if you say what Brandon's saying right now, it becomes stop dividing. Right. But go ahead.
We should all be working together. Let's address that in a minute.
Yeah. I'm glad that this is a reason why I'm really glad that we got to do this with Brandon, because there's so many things I wanted to, and Brandon, you've been in such high demand lately. I haven't even tried to reach out to book you for my show, but I wanted to, if I had your number, I would have texted you the night I saw you on Levin. Okay. So, but what I got to say here is this. I've always been feeling this kind of stuff from the beginning here. If you're exiting something, you must be entering into something else. What is that thing that people are entering into if they're making all of these exit movements? And I don't see it. Now, going back to your episode on Levin, Life, Liberty, and Levin, which was probably, in my opinion, it was your best night, your best moment. It was so powerful. It was amazing. And you were talking about how the next phase of all this is education. And it is so important for that to be the next best thing. I would have to, if I can make any suggestion to you, I would say this. You got to hook up with people like Chris Ann Hall. You got to hook up with people like Brian McClanahan, with people like Tom Woods. These are libertarian historians, people who talk about liberty of the individual, our country's history. And people like Chris Ann Hall, who started Liberty First University. She not only will tell you about the history of our country and go back to the Magna Carta to talk about what the foundation of our Constitution was, but she and her husband have been keen on highlighting our Black founders of America, our female founders of America, all the things that really tear apart what people try to build up on an identity level. And these are people who tour all over the country doing seminars and writing lessons in children's history books. This is exactly what needs to be done. And I'll tell you, Brandon, when you walked away and when you really put yourself out there for that first time and you just said, hey, here I am, I never got that inference from you that you were telling people I know everything. All you were saying was I'm declaring my independence from what is obviously a trap. It is a tar pit. And you know, from there, once any person declares their independence or something, they're merely walking into a bright new morning. And like, you know that there's still so much to learn. And sometimes the most freeing part of all that is knowing you know nothing. You know, that is an amazingly freeing thing to say, you know what? I don't know a lot, and I can't wait to find out what the hell I've been missing out on. And I think that was, to me, I thought that was the most inspiring part of Walk Away, especially if I was trying to empathize with the people saying, I'm getting out of this. Because I know when you find something really intriguing, there is nothing like waking up the next morning saying, I can't wait to learn more. And, you know, that's why I think that it was a very attractive thing when it came forward. But also, like we're talking about now, it's a very attractive thing to start a movement and have it catch fire. And people watching you and your success with it being a very organic happening, everyone wants to be the next Abbie Hoffman. Everybody wants to be shouting into a microphone in front of the Washington Monument like it's Forrest Gump. That's exactly what all the exit spinoffs are. And I just wish everybody would just see the goal here, which is education, like you were talking about on Levin. And if anything goes forward, I just really hope it's you know, saddling up with historians and teachers and people who can really fill in those blanks. Because I think that there's a lot of – when people – they say, okay, I'm done. I'm walking away. And then there's just this void. What gets filled in there? I don't know. They start a Facebook group and they just try to – figure it out instead of picking up some books.
Frank, you speak in very, very intriguing monologues. And it's like I'm sitting here literally like trying to write notes because there's so many things that you said that I want to respond to. And like my memory is not that long anymore. So I want to address some of these things that you just said, because you said a lot of good stuff there. First, let's go back to the point that you were making about what are you walking to and, you know, education, et cetera. One thing that I said from the very beginning, and this is something that really resonated with a lot of people, and to be really, really, really honest with you, I would have to think hard on why I even chose to do this, because I don't even know that I completely remember at this moment. But I made a decision from the very beginning that Walk Away was going to essentially be about opening a door and not about providing a specific path anywhere. I mean, what I said since the beginning is that Walk Away is a journey, not a destination, meaning that it's about leaving the Democratic Party. It's about leaving the grips of what I think is a cult, the ideology of liberalism, and essentially walking away from that cult. But then you're walking, well, where are we walking to? That's up to each and every individual. I eventually found myself, after almost a year, in the Republican Party, and I found myself a Trump supporter. That's not something, a decision that I came to overnight. That's a decision that I came to after getting in bed and reading and watching videos, and the process is ongoing and ongoing. I mean, the more that I see and find out about the Republican Party, and I don't want to confuse this point, nothing like what I feel about the Democratic Party, not even close.
No, they're horrible too, Brandon. Don't feel bad. It's fine.
No, I mean, I don't want to make a generalization like that, because the ways I'm disappointed by the Republican Party are very different, very, very different than the ways
It's different shades of disappointment. Yeah.
The point is that, you know, I may decide in time that that's not the right place for me either. And that's part of my journey. You know, it's ongoing. And so that's what I encourage all people to do, their own homework, to read and to not just believe the liberal media and not just believe what they read and see on Facebook and Twitter, but to do their own homework, to do their own research, and to go on that journey on their own. Now, in terms of, you know, you made some comments about, you know, the feeling of not knowing everything and sort of embracing that feeling. I am very aware, I think, of who I am and who I'm not. Like, I'm very, very aware that I am not Ben Shapiro. I am very, very aware that I am not, you know, Ann Coulter or Jordan Peterson or what have you. I think what's interesting about me and sorry, that sounded really immodest, but I think what's interesting and what's resonating about me with people is that I don't pretend to be something that I'm not. And that is to say, I am willing to, in the public square, admit that I have a lot to learn. I was just recently red-pilled. I, in many ways, need to unlearn much of which I thought I had already learned. I have a lot. There's a lot of backtracking I need to go and sort of re-educating myself and uncovering the truth. And that in itself is a process and a journey that's ongoing too. And I'm willing to do that publicly. I've made a lot of mistakes. I mean, I did a public debate with a very intelligent liberal, and I don't like the way that that came off, because I think, you know, it was humbling for me, you know, having that experience. But again, I think that in itself is important, because so much of what makes the silent majority silent is that they're afraid to. They know that what they feel, that they believe in the Constitution, they believe in the conservative values, you know, that sort of represent what it means to either be a conservative, what it means to be a Republican, but they don't always know how to articulate that. And they're very afraid of embarrassing themselves or being tongue-tied or feeling, you know, like I know in my gut that I believe in what I believe in, but if when push comes to shove, if I'm actually in a debate with somebody who's very articulate and, you know, quick-witted, whatever, I'm going to end up looking foolish. So, you know, I think that there's value in being a person too who's just willing to put myself out there as I am, and I don't always come out, you know, necessarily as, you know, the person who won the debate or whatever. But it's still important to sit there and show up and have the debate and to show other people, like, listen, you maybe you don't always win every single time, or maybe you don't always come off, you know, smelling like a rose every single time, but you don't remain silent. You know, the era of the silent majority has to be over. Everybody has to step up and at least be willing to have the conversation. And I feel like there's value in that too.
Which is,
yeah, I think you've done a good job at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And you know, that's where this new video series is coming in, right, Brendan? I mean, honestly. Yeah. So we're doing that Thursday. We're going to travel and talk about that for a minute.
Right. So this Thursday, we're headed to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we're going to begin filming the very first of what will be hopefully a long and ongoing educational series of videos from Walk Away. And we're going to be doing, you know, kind of in a similar style as PragerU, where there's one speaker speaking on a topic, 4 or 5 minute video that has graphics, animation, et cetera. But, you know, we'll be putting a lot of our focus on kind of waking people up and red pilling them, I think. And it's really going to be a series that's geared toward liberals. Well, all people really, but I mean, I think there's going to be a focus on connecting with people, why they should walk away, particularly people who are already feeling kind of pushed to the fringe and probably feeling like they're ready to walk away anyway. It's sort of a reassurance, like, look, yes, that feeling that you're having inside of you is correct. And let's talk about these different topics. We'll be talking about socialism, identity politics, racism, the liberal media bias and lies and myths, and really trying to get people to see the ways in which they're being manipulated with the information that they're receiving. I just heard something recently. See, this is what I'm saying. It's like it's an ongoing journey. I have known in my gut that what the liberal media has been saying since Trump got elected about hate crimes are spiking, I knew that that was BS. I knew it. I don't necessarily deny that the reports are spiking, but I do not believe that hate crimes are on the rise, and certainly not because of Donald Trump. But finally, a report came out recently, I read it yesterday, that finally made sense of what I have known intuitively in my gut. And it was saying that I think basically since like 2016, something probably around the time Trump was elected, that there were about 1,000 more law enforcement institutions which were dedicated to reporting these crimes to the FBI. So it's not that the crimes themselves have risen, it's that the reports have risen because a large amount of facilities that are dedicated to reporting these crimes have been instituted. That's all it is. And not to mention the fact that we all know that a great number of these reports are hoaxes, and people feel more compelled to report a hoax hate crime now because they're trying to push a point. They're trying to say, oh, white supremacists and Nazis, and, you know, and So I need to do my part in squashing Nazism and white supremacy, even if that means telling a lie, because the lie, the end justifies the means to my lie, because I'm fighting Nazism and I'm fighting white supremacy. So it's okay that I'm reporting a fake crime. That's what's happening. But this is what liberalism does time and time and time again. They look at the end result. They look at a number and they say, ah, women are not being paid as much as men, and blacks are not being paid as much as white. And they disregard all of the variables that fall in as to why, yes, that may be true. That may be true that white people are making more money than black people, or that men are making more money than women. But it leaves out all of the reasonable evidence that actually explains why that's happening, which doesn't lead to the inevitable conclusion that bigotry, racism, sexism, homophobia. And anyway, this is what we're trying to wake people up to, that, you know, just the conclusion that you're being fed and the narrative that you're being fed with that conclusion, you need to start doing more research. You need to start understanding that an agenda is being pushed upon you, and that there's a lot more variables that go into these conclusions that people need to start asking questions about.
Yeah, I you're talking about the media aspect of all that too. And if you really look at I make a lot of Lord of the Rings references, even though I don't watch a lot of Lord of the Rings, but I call the media the Eye of Sauron, where, you know, wherever you have an entire realm, you have an entire world where you have good things and bad things going on. Some of the most horrific things, you can always find something worse than the thing that you just read. And at the other hand, the most inspiring things you can find. And where does the media put all their attention? And it was part of a conversation that I was having with Lauren over the weekend about media and how the idea of 24-hour news networks is really just obscene. There is no reason. There's not enough news for 24-hour news.
Speaking of what you're saying right now, it's so true, because Stephen Crowder just did a piece on Brian Stelter, your friend.
Yeah.
Where he basically said that. He said, Brian Stelter is using airtime on his 24-hour cable news network to talk about why they need a 24-hour cable news.
I mean, seriously, well, listen, you have 24-hour news networks. They are entirely unnecessary, because it takes nothing, absolutely nothing, to produce a segment or two a night on data, and you give the simple slug line, the who, what, where, and when. The problem is that all these news anchors and all these networks, they focus 90% of their operations on speculating on the why, which is not what you're supposed to be doing. So that's where you get all these opinion shows and the snarky monologues and the homilies and all that stuff. And what you have here is these national news networks that are able to go into the backyard of a small little hamlet somewhere in Wisconsin, and they will blow it up into a national tragedy, so that you feel like, there was a racially induced riot somewhere in the middle of the country. All of a sudden, you feel like there's a race riot going on in your backyard. And this is what they create. They create this monstrous delusion that you're in the middle of a virtual war. And it's just so much. And yeah, you were right. When it comes to the hate crimes, many of them are hoaxes. You can actually go to websites like fakehatecrimes.org, and they do a lot of different types of chronicling of all that. You should see all of the reported hate crimes that ended up being hoaxes around November and December 2016, right after Trump got elected. Everybody was attacking themselves. Everybody was beating themselves up in bathrooms, like Jim Carrey and Liar Liar.
Blood, guts, and gore. So we have about 8 minutes left in the show. And you wanted to, this has been great so far. Thank you, Brendan, for spending an hour of your day
with you guys. Indeed. Yeah, Frank, I didn't know you didn't have my number. I'll give it to you immediately when the show's over.
Perfect.
He's going to give you a fake number. I'll give you the real one after.
It's an old trick.
You wanted to touch upon something. You wanted to get back to something. Do you remember what it was? I said, oh, you're attacked if you start to speak out about, you know, questioning things or...
Oh, yeah. I think all I was going to say is that, because we were speaking about me specifically in the movement and these spinoff movements, et cetera. And so I recognize that I'm in a bit of a sticky position, because if I'm critical of them in any way, shape, or form, the the conclusion that people, I think, automatically come to is that I'm being, you know, spiteful or jealous or whatever. And so it makes it difficult for me to be able to just openly communicate with people about my concerns. And these are legitimate concerns. Number one, the conservatives, please start vetting the movements that you're supporting and do a little read. I mean, this is like the same conversations that we're having with liberals. Do research about, just because you see a word that you like, and this is really what it's all about. I mean, I think there's such a desperation, and I get it. I think conservatives for so long have felt frustrated. I feel like they think that they've been beating their heads against the wall with minorities. Like, why don't Black people understand that the Democratic Party is bad for them? Why don't they understand? Why don't LGBT people, Jewish people, et cetera, understand? And so, you know, they see all of a sudden a hashtag that indicates that perhaps these minority groups might be waking up, and they're like, oh, no questions asked. It's my favorite thing. Where do I write a check? And it's like, guys, like what happened with me in Walkaway, and I think this needs to be reiterated. I started Walkaway as a hairstylist with $300 in my savings account. I didn't have a single media contact in my phone. I didn't know any politicians. I had no political clout or backing of any kind. I didn't have a single donor. I didn't know wealthy people. By the way, I still don't really have any donors, but the point is that this movement took off because it was an organic idea that people really, really wanted. And so you have to beware of that, because there are people out there who see that and who think, ah, this is a quick way to get fame, money, and notoriety, and frankly, to take credit for work that they're not really doing. By simply inventing a word, you can say, aha, it's because of me that all of these people are leaving the Democratic Party. I'm not going to get into it, but there is one of these movements where the entire press, like, was literally going crazy, like being like, you know, bringing this person on television and talking about this person and stuff. And I thought, this movement has literally not done a single thing. They haven't held a rally. They haven't done an event. They haven't put out an initiative. They, for all intents and purposes, are literally at this point a word, just a word. And I was like, why on earth has the media jumped all over this? Well, because this movement got a ton, they conceived it in a boardroom. They got a ton of money. They hired a PR agent. And why are conservatives not asking any questions about this? I mean, that's amazing to me. It blows my mind. But it's like, you know, I just even having this conversation today, I guarantee you a good number of people are going to hear this and be like, ah, he's being spiteful. He's being resentful.
I know. And, you know, it's hard because I face the same thing. When I find info, like, I'm always afraid to share my opinion because there's going to be a group of people out there that are going to come after you and come after you hard. They see it as an opportunity. And I think that we're getting really way too kind of brainwashed by this groupthink.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, Frank.
I was just going to say, ultimately, I don't care how people organize themselves. I just wish that there was a little bit more communication between everybody, and there was some kind of a shared, shared mission, which is the individual. You said, first of all, we're talking about exit as the optimal word here that is being seized upon. It's just like what I brought up before with Occupy Wall Street. Occupy became a word that everybody was using for about a year and a half. It was Occupy this. It was Occupy that. It's just one of those things. We all see what's hot. We move with the trends, especially when it comes down to branding. People know what sells as far as branding goes, even if their movement has some real mission statement or some kind of a charter that is worth paying attention to. I just think everybody pays attention to branding in a certain way. With that being said, I will never ever be upset that people are becoming, I don't know, inspired to get out there and do something, just as long as they have a, you know, this is what we're doing. I don't know.
The point is that we don't even know if this is real in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead. That's all I wanted to say.
No, I mean, absolutely. And it's like, I mean, listen, there are different groups in our society that are in a very different place on the socioeconomic ladder than other groups. And wouldn't it be a good idea to specifically isolate and target that group and say that you're going to head a movement? And, you know, in order to head my movement, I need support. So please, you know, send money. And I need this and I need that. I mean, this concerns me because I've never done that. I mean, Walk Away is a movement for everybody. We have every race. We have every sexual orientation.
Let me counter you for a second, because I think this is something that people are going to say. Why then did you do a documentary just focusing on Black Americans? And why did you do a town hall that was just for LGBT people?
Right. And we'll continue to do more of that kind of targeted marketing, I think, in the future. The reason why is because I've never swayed from the notion that different groups need to be communicated with in different ways, number one. And number two, the whole idea of sort of quarantining these minorities and targeting them in a specific way is not something that the conservative movement has ever done. That's what liberals did. So liberals have built up walls around these minority groups. So I think in order to communicate with them, we have to go where they are. I don't expect that if I, you know, put out a movie that is, you know, largely about Jewish people walking away from the Democratic Party, that Black people are going to be like, oh, we should walk away too. You need to go to Black people where they are and say, listen, 90% of you voted Democrat in the 2018 election. And that number is statistically about where you guys have been falling in general. How is this working out for you? That documentary that we did was 20 Black Americans telling their own stories about why they walked away.
So once they get out of there, you're not saying we're going to keep ourselves as victimized Black Americans on the right. You're saying, no. Welcome to the pool. Everyone's here.
Welcome to the family. Right. Yes. And once again, this family is not, there is no specific destination. There is no groupthink. There is no belief system. It's literally about, it's as if you were taking, if you have the key and we as a community, a network and a family are going around and we're unlocking cages together. We're letting people out of the cage and say, listen, you don't have to walk with us if you don't want to, but you know, we want to set you free. And we want to, we hope you do walk with us as we continue to free more and more people. But this is not a cult. It's not, you know, it's not a new political party where you have to believe something that we believe. It's literally just a mission to wake people up and set people free. And we don't care what the color of your skin is. We don't care what your sexual orientation is. We just care about liberating your mind. It's about an intellectual liberation. And that's really what Walk Away is all about. And it's irrespective of these different, you know, micro identities. You know, I mean, because this is the thing that's next. I mean, as people, I think, want to jump on this bandwagon, I mean, pretty soon we're going to be seeing the trans Black exit, and we're going to be seeing, you know, the type 2 diabetes exit. And we're going to be like, you know what I mean? Because it's just like everybody. Listen, I'm just going to say it. The one that I saw recently about. Okay, I don't want to pull. There was one recently about a specific religious group, and it wasn't the Jewish community. It wasn't that one, but it was like an even more sort of microcosm, chasm, religious group. And I was just like, come on. Like nobody is locked into the Democratic Party because of, you know, that specific subsect of their faith. Like, that's not even a thing. You know, I mean, it's literally at a certain point, you just have to ask yourself, does this person just want to be in the news?
Or are they there since they're on a mission? I mean, are they trying to water? Yes.
Exactly. And that's the other question, too, I think. Absolutely. And listen, and here's the other thing that I know we're running out of time, but I just want to say another reason why I feel like I have legitimate cause for concern. Some of these new groups that are doing these exits have literally, like, basically copied and pasted from my website mission statements and just replaced a couple of words. Whereas I have said, I've made it more general and said liberals, the Democratic Party does this to liberals. The Democratic Party does whatever. They've replaced it with their specific word, you know, that whatever their group is. But my thing is, if your movement is organic and you are legitimate, and you are doing this from a place of passion and genuine, you know, zeal, because this is something that you feel strongly about, why did you go to my website and copy and paste my mission statement that I wrote myself from my heart. And I mean, I'm telling you that as I've gone on some of these websites and read, I'm like, those words came directly out of my mouth. Like I've actually said that in interviews verbatim, what you're saying. And so, I mean, it's to me, that seems like an indication that they're taking a formula that has been successful and trying to make that formula their own. And why? I would venture to guess they'd like to get on Fox News too. They'd like to have people donate to their cause. Yeah, it's, you know?
Yeah, it's a rough spot to be in. It's a rough spot to be in. And you know, again, before we end, I tend to think of it as from a more strategic way. Like if you are on the left and you see how successful Walkaway is being, it's been targeted several times. I mean, by mainstream Russian, by all the stuff we know. If you see that, you're going to try to dilute and water it down as best as possible. This is the way the left operates.
Yes.
I know that there are people embedded within the conservative movement that are not really conservative. It's just the truth. And so they're taking well-meaning people and they're basically now weaponizing them against their own cause.
Yeah. And listen, just my recommendation here is really actually no different than the recommendation I made at the beginning with Walkaway, which is I'm just giving the message to conservatives. You don't have to do or not do anything that you don't want to do. And if it makes you feel good to support these movements, great. All I ask, do some research, like and a good amount. I mean, how did this organization come to be? Who is funding it? What do you know about their spokesperson? What do you, like, do like research their background? Find that out. I mean, I went through all of that. I was heavily scrutinized when I started Walkaway for months. I mean, there was a period there where I was like, is this ever going to end? Like, when do I get, you know, credibility in people's eyes that like I'm literally doing this from my heart in an organic way? But that's not happening with any of these new movements. I mean, it's like literally the second somebody makes up a word, people are jumping on it and being like, great, I'm on board. I love it. I love it. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is like, once you're like not asking any questions, you're not scrutinizing, you're not doing any due diligence here, even one of those movements turning out to be a sham or being a bad operative, that has the power to not only dilute, but to pull down
everything else.
The rest. Yeah. Because it's like, oh, well, they're all, because you've tied them all together. You did that. You tied them all together. And so now they're all going to fall down together.
I love this. Perfect. Listen, Frank, I know you've been quiet for the past couple minutes. I apologize.
No, I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, listen, this was great. I mean, we went a little over, but that's fine because guess what? We run this place, so it's fine. but this was our first Monday show. Brandon, this was awesome. I really love talking to you, as you know, because we do it a lot. But thank you for taking your time and sharing your honest thoughts with everybody because it's important.
Thank you, Tracy. And actually, how about this? Why don't we end on a positive note? Because I would like to express this thought too, which I think is a positive way to go out. For any of these movements in which I think that they really are like organic and legitimate and being headed up by somebody who really wants to make a difference and really wants to do something positive, my hope is that that person might get in touch with me and ask me, hey, how might we collaborate? How might we work together? How might we do this? Because by the way, that's never happened from anybody in any of these. No one from any of these exit movements has ever reached out to me and said, love what you're doing with Walkaway. How can we make this thing bigger, reach more people? How can we, you know, so if you're really organic and you're really legitimate and you really are coming from a good place, I think that that would be a natural next step to take.
Awesome. Collaboration.
Good job.
Yeah. Hey, Frank.
Yes.
Guess what? We're going to be back on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing shows 3 days a week now. But before we end off, I want to tell everyone to go to walkawaycampaign.com, right?
Yes, please.
Check out Brandon at US Minority on Twitter. He's beat me by followers now in leaps and bounds. I'm getting a little jealous, I have to say.
Am I?
You are. You're like 130.
I don't pay attention to those
kinds. I know, Brandon.
Of
I know.
I'm like, my followers went down today. What's going on?
Yep. And, you know, consider coming to the big party that we're going to be having in May at Trump International Hotel, right?
It's going to be so much fun. Yeah.
Are you guys going back to D.C.?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, May 18th, it's our one-year anniversary. We're going to do a Roaring 20s party at the Trump International. It's going to be so much fun. Frank, you've got to come.
Oh, boy. If I come, I'm going to have to go and dig deep into the costume selection from Boardwalk Empire and get some inspiration.
Oh, I love it.
I got my 20s dress.
Lauren would love to dress like a flapper.
Yep. It's going to be great. Fun. And you guys can catch us again on Wednesday. You can catch us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and our host, RadioInfluence.com. Have a good one, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.